Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. At Denver Bible Church, we deal with much news of the day as though the reports were parables coming out of the Bible. Of course, Jesus discussed the news events of his day, like a building that collapsed and killed people, and the innocent Galileans who were murdered by judicial decree. Well, many of you have subscribed to get our sermons mailed to you each month, but for those who have not, we want you to hear our April 3rd sermon, so here it is.
We have just witnessed one of the most important deaths of our time, and this is April 3rd, 2005. And 65 years ago today, this very day, something extremely significant happened related to this death that we'll talk about in a moment. But death is an important part of the life and death issues that Jesus Christ spoke to. The four Gospels use the word death 44 times. So we will take some time and think through the implications of this important death and what Terry Schiavo's struggle means to America. It is quite a coincidence that the Pope and Terry were so near death at the same time. And then when doctors put the Pope on a feeding tube, the confluence of these two stories became rather extraordinary. And then the two of them died in the same week, just 2 days apart, just after Easter. And at Denver Bible Church, we are not Roman Catholics, but I think both of them were. Is that right? Was the Pope Catholic? Yeah. And while I don't follow Rome's proclamations carefully, it seems that perhaps the very last action taken by the Vatican under the authority of Pope John Paul II was on behalf of Terry Schiavo, calling out to America not to kill her, and that while it is okay to let dying people die, Terry was not dying, and they argued it was immoral to starve someone to death. And I must say that while by default we are Protestant here at Denver Bible Church because we're not Catholic, so by default we're Protestant, but the Catholic Church spoke far more clearly in defense of Terry than did the Protestant leaders. Now, we are not Catholics because we believe that the Catholic Church has rebelled against some of the most basic teachings of Scripture to argue that the next pope will be in a valid succession of popes requires the Catholic Church to prove that there was a first pope to begin with. And to that end, they will get no support from Peter, who was married and, according to the New Testament, was still traveling with his wife many years after the resurrection. And they will get no support from Paul, who wrote to Timothy and Titus, the next generation of church leaders, that the qualifications for bishops included that they should be the husband of one wife and rule their families well. And Paul specifically warned about those who will come and forbid marriage. And he warned about that. And because God made most of us with an extraordinary desire for marriage, one of the consequences of forcing celibacy on the clergy has been the abuse scandal, which has even hit our own church, in that one of our families right here today has a cousin who committed suicide after having written a note detailing his abuse by a Roman Catholic priest here in Colorado when he was a young boy, just in the weeks after his father had died suddenly. This priest plied him with alcohol and pornography and began him down a road of addiction and depression from which he never recovered. So life is fraught with dangers, and we need to be vigilant over our hearts and our minds and our actions and words, for ideas have consequences. And the idea to kill Terry Schiavo, a woman who was not dying but was handicapped, that idea has consequences. In the last 3 weeks, America has publicly embraced euthanasia. That's new for our country. The intentional killing of people who are not dying. And this move has come with the complicity of our Protestant religious leaders and various pro-life leaders and organizations, and by the voices of many second-tier spokesmen for the pro-life movement, like talk show hosts and conservative politicians and religious activists, for they have centered their defense of Terry on the lack of a written directive, as though all of a sudden that's the only moral issue, whether or not someone indicates they want to commit suicide, then most of the conservative religious community in America has crossed over just in the last 3 weeks to embrace suicide, euthanasia, assisted suicide, living wills instead of the will to live, because we live at a time when the medical community is eager to find reasons to pull the plug. People who could perhaps even recover are killed so that organs could be harvested because they've indicated that that is their wishes. These pro-lifers and conservative religious activists, they've centered their defense on this written directive, and that has given startling momentum to the pro-euthanasia camp in America. For we saw that these pro-lifers were working to create laws such that the Hemlock Society could never have passed. Never. Because the same pro-lifers would have fought against the same laws if it was the euthanasia camp trying to pass them. Laws that would, for the first time, give federal recognition to state-assisted suicide laws and declare that America accepts suicide and euthanasia by assisted suicide as long as the states have a law that says you have permission to kill yourself. Now, Leslie Hanks, who's a board member for Colorado Right to Life, she's here, and during the announcements, she mentioned our former governor, Dick Lamb. And I have a book up here, and Dick Lamb actually is quoted on the back as endorsing the book. The book is called Final Exit, and it's written by a longtime president of the Hemlock Society, Derek Humphrey. Final Exit, basically how to commit suicide, how to kill yourself. And in the back, Isaac Asimov wrote, "No decent human being would allow an animal to suffer without putting it out of its misery. It is only to human beings that we are so cruel without moving a muscle to help. It is against such attitudes that this book fights." Let's see, Governor Dick Lamb, Colorado, former governor, "Final Exit gives us important options to this inevitable event." And at the top of the book, it says, "Final Exit is intended to be read by a mature adult." Now, of course, we know that your local librarian will enforce that, right? We know that the American Library Association, their policy is that even children should have full access to all library materials, including any pornography that they have access to at the library. That's the official position of the Librarians of America. And so, of course, Barnes & Noble or the libraries would not be concerned about this very subtle concern here that it's only for adults. Now, a while back, USA Today reported that Americans were killing themselves at a rate of about 31,000 suicides a year. And in Colorado, the number of suicides has about equaled the number of traffic deaths at 600 to 700 per year. And of course, suicide has become one of the leading causes of death of young people in America. Wherever suicide loses its social stigma, life becomes increasingly threatened. Remember with the Japanese culture that revered suicide, and kamikaze pilots helped to prolong their nation's suicidal aggression in World War II. And Islamic suicide bombers have been elevated to the status of holy martyrs, and they target the innocent. And in America, as suicide continues to lose its social stigma, we have a never-ending succession of crimes of murder-suicide. Murderers by definition, are bad problem solvers. And when suicide is not in vogue, then people who would not otherwise become murderers, they seem far less likely to think up a murder-suicide plot. But when everyone is talking about suicide, when respectable people are suggesting it as a reasonable strategy, when people at the fringe of emotional health have suicide conditioning through our culture, so that suicide frequently comes to their mind, and it becomes the escape route at their fingertips should they ever need it. And so we have an epidemic of murder-suicides. You know, in this book that was endorsed by Richard Lamb, let me just read you a couple of the chapter titles. Shopping for the Right Doctor, that is to kill you, of course, where the Hippocratic Oath said thousands of years ago, first, do no harm. There's a chapter on the dilemma of quadriplegics. When Hugh Hewitt, the conservative Christian on Salem Radio Network, was asked this past Friday by Michael Medved, well, Hugh, we are all supporting assisted suicide when there's a written directive, but how about for quadriplegics? Michael Medved, Dennis Prager, and Hugh Hewitt are on this program together. And Hugh Hewitt, one of the largest Christian conservative pro-life talk show hosts in America, he said, oh, yes, I agree that if a quadriplegic wants to be starved, you know, I didn't put it in specific terms, but I absolutely support the right of quadriplegics to commit suicide and to have assisted suicide. That's Hugh Hewitt, all right? Here's a chapter, self-starvation. Here's a chapter, how do you get the magic pills? Here's a chapter, self-deliverance via the plastic bag. Here's a very insightful chapter, I'm sure, going together. It's an actual 2.5-page treatment of the subject. It helpfully includes a drug dosage table. The chapter on plastic bags, self-deliverance via the plastic bag on page 95, if you are committing suicide, then a plastic bag, as well as drugs, is highly advisable. So that's from the president of the Hemlock Society, endorsed by Dick Lamb, who was the first to introduce a bill in America to legalize abortion in 1967, April 25th. And he then went on to become the governor of Colorado, the duty to die Lamb. If respected and responsible adults and popular culture icons, if they defend and even elevate the right to kill yourself in order to escape pain, then how about 15-year-old boys? They import that thinking into their own world. And they don't bring in the caveats that Cal Thomas might include in one of his columns, that this is really only for mature adults. You know, the 15-year-old doesn't really care what it says on the back of the book, that he's not supposed to read it. Emotional pain is far more difficult to bear than physical pain, as people know who have endured both. At least with physical pain, our bodies have a defense mechanism that causes us to pass out. You pass out if you're in enough pain. And we could take medication for physical pain, but emotional pain is inescapable. Even after death, by the way, although most people don't know that, people think, Harrison Klebold think, oh, we could escape consequences, we'll just kill ourselves, and they run right into the hands of the judge. And even people who are committing suicide because they can't take the misery in their lives, what their lives have become, and they think that suicide is an escape, but it's not. It's not an escape. For Christians, yes, the Bible says that Jesus Christ will wipe away those tears, but those tears are there to be wiped away. They follow us to the afterlife. The judgment seat of Christ doesn't determine whether we go to heaven or hell, but it's what has become of your life. And people will lose rewards because of their deeds in the flesh. And of course, that will produce sorrow. Heaven is not a Neverland of make-believe. Heaven is real. And God will heal us. And Christ will wipe away those tears, but they will be there to wipe away. Emotional pain is extraordinarily difficult to deal with, and even more so for those who are immature. And when that 15-year-old boy is betrayed by his best friend, then he seeks the same solution to escape pain as advocated this week by our religious conservatives like Dennis Prager and Michael Medved and Cal Thomas and Hugh Hewitt. Kill yourself to relieve the pain. We support that, except that it won't. And in fact, we'll even help you if you left a written directive. Now let's compare that and what's passing as responsible moral policy by much of the pro-life community, the Republican Party in America, the conservative religious activist. Let's compare all that to Denver Bible Church and the message here. Doug McBurney goes to Florida to try to bring a cup of water to Terry Schiavo. And the Rocky Mountain News calls me and asks me, well, as the pastor of this church, do you approve of that? And I said, is this a trick question? One of our guys is bringing a cup of water to a woman who's dying, and you ask me if I approve of that? And then she wanted to know also about Carl Henderson, who was arrested there for crying out that something needs to be done. And I said, I know this is controversial today, but as a Christian pastor, I believe it's wrong to kill the innocent. So Carl is still in jail. Mike Tiemann, our dear friend, went there with his daughter and their friend. Jonathan Miller has offered to pay, to some extent, the way of Carl. The Sutherlands, they were down at the state Supreme Court after Terry died. Everett was on TV. Thank you, Everett, for having that sign on Fox News. And the Bernhardts were at that protest that was on Channel 2 and 4. Letting people know how tragic it is that we've killed Terry. And Leslie Hanks is here, the board member from Colorado Right to Life, who was on a hunger strike, not to threaten or hurt herself, it was a limited time, but in solidarity with Terry. And so many, Ken and Joe, and pretty much I have to go around and name everyone in the church, so please don't hold it against me if I don't. But that's the comparison, where most of the pro-life conservative movement is and where we are. And perhaps we're too foolish? I don't think so. I think what it is we don't have the ambition of the rest of the pro-life movement to be accepted in the inner clique, in the circle, whether it's on media or with the political parties. We're more determined to stay faithful to God's principles in His Word. In Europe, euthanasia has been advocated since the 1890s, and even today in Holland, there are no end to the euthanasia scandals, with surveys indicating that among the greatest fears of the elderly is being killed by their doctors, and with teenagers being euthanized, teenagers, of course, with parental consent, mind you. And now, with leading hospitals petitioning the government to pass laws to legitimize their existing practice of killing handicapped newborns, babies born to demanding parents, babies who don't fit Europe's designer gene culture, which reminds me of America's former Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop, and his prediction that if we begin killing babies in the womb, infanticide will become epidemic. As people conditioned to kill babies make the logical connection that there's no real difference between a baby in utero and a baby in a crib. No real difference. But I'd like to share what happened 65 years ago today, April 3rd, 1940. You know, Germany started killing people first by the hundreds, then the thousands, then by the millions. And there are extraordinary books out today that document how they got to that point. Books like A Sign for Cain, The German Euthanasia Program, this book right here, Cleansing the Fatherland. And in here, there are minutes to a conference of mayors that met in Berlin, April 3rd, 1940. And I'm going to read to you those minutes in a moment. But what Germany did before they killed a single Jew for being a Jew in a concentration camp, they killed tens of thousands of Germans. And it was the medical community that led the way. Now, civilization is very fragile. Germany was the pinnacle of art and science and culture in Europe. And it was Germany that gave the world the horror of the Holocaust, slaughtering millions of people, men, women, and children, doing experiments on people, including babies and twins, before they kill them, doing experiments, and then autopsies after they were dead. And the people who did this, they weren't just Nazi Party members. They were people who were involved with their universities. They were medical associations. They were governmental leaders who had been in power for 30, 40 years, some of them, before Hitler came to power. In fact, in Germany, they legalized euthanasia, and you needed three doctors to agree that a patient needed to be euthanized. And now that the Berlin Wall has come down, researchers have access literally to tens of millions of pages of original documents, which they have been doing their best to record and to publish. And so in one case, for example, a boy who was institutionalized, a young boy, three doctors agreed, they had to put their reasons, and all three agreed because the boy was a bedwetter and they euthanized him. They killed him for that reason. And one director of an institution for the handicapped, he sent a survey out to family members, to about 200 family members, and he wanted to know their opinion on what if they killed their relative, the patient. And they got back a significant number of replies, and they left a room for comments, and they were actually, the director was shocked that so many of the comments were similar, and it was this. The relative said, "Why are you asking us this? It's so cruel of you to ask us. You should just do this and not tell us." And so they actually used that advice in order to begin the slaughter of tens of thousands of Germans in what they called their K4 department, just some make-believe title. This is what they did. They wanted to clear out their institutions, their hospitals, because they didn't want to waste money on caring for the handicapped or the mentally retarded or whoever they didn't approve of. And so they would move a patient. They'd move a patient to another institution and wait about 4 weeks. They'd just move them and wait. And if no family member followed up and said, "Where's my father? Where's our daughter? Where's my cousin?" then they would move them one more time, and within about 10 days or so, they would kill them. And that was their strategy they used, and they killed many tens of thousands of Germans. And then they began to kill the Jews. So I'd like to read you this. It's from this book, Cleansing the Fatherland. April 3rd, 1940, all the mayors in Germany met for a conference. And I guess when the Nazis say, "We're having a conference, you've got to be there." And they were all there. And the mayor of Munich presided. His name was Karl Fiedler. And he had been the mayor of Munich for 30 years. He wasn't a hand-picked Nazi. He was just a bureaucrat. He was a government bureaucrat. And we still have the minutes to the meeting, and it informed all the mayors of Germany that they were going to empty the hospital beds to conserve resources by killing the patients, and they would deliver urns with the ashes of each patient. You know, they were very organized and meticulous. And they explained the responsibility of each mayor was simply to deal with the bodily remains of the hospital patients. And the plan initially was they were going to kill the mentally and physically handicapped. And over the next 5 years, town cemeteries took delivery of tens of thousands of urns of Germans. Now, we can't tell you what will happen over the next 5 years in America, but we know what happened in Germany. Here's the minutes I've got. April 3rd, 1940. In many mental institutions in the Reich, there are an infinite number of incurably ill patients of all kinds who are completely useless to humanity. In fact, they are nothing but a burden. Their care creates endless expense, and there is no possibility that these people will ever become healthy or useful members of human society. I was listening to the former education secretary on his radio show Friday morning, Bill Bennett, and he had a call from somebody talking about a euthanasia question in his own family. The guy was saying whether he himself would be euthanized. And the guy said, really, I decided I don't want to be because I love my family. I want to be there for them. And Bill Bennett said, so you're saying that you're still useful to them? And he said, yes, I'm useful. And Bill Bennett, he reiterated. He said, so you're needed, you're useful. And the man, actually, a couple minutes later, the caller said, you know what I like about you, Bill Bennett? You really use your words intentionally, and you say exactly what you mean. And I thought, here's Bill Bennett pointing out that this guy's making a good decision not committing suicide because he's still useful. That comes right out of the Nazi experience. I mean, that is the Nazi experience. And Bill Bennett, one of our second-tier pro-life spokesmen, is talking like that. The whole world has gone insane. So they will never again become useful members of human society. They vegetate like Terry Schiavo, right? They vegetate like animals. They only take nourishment away from other healthy people and often need two or three times as much care. Other people must be protected from these people. We must eliminate these beings, even if only to better maintain curable patients in mental hospitals. It is difficult because, now you know what they said? This is the problem. They want to do it, but here's the problem. It is difficult above all because of the church. Now, isn't that neat? If there actually had been a church which would have cared, they knew it where their potential problem came from. It is difficult above all because of the church. It is also dangerous because of the Americans. Isn't that astounding that the mayors in Munich would point this out? And, you know, it's taken now 65 years for America to be there. I mean, we're not quite there yet. We're not saying let's kill all of the handicapped, but we've got our conservative, religious, activist, and pro-lifers saying, hey, if the quadriplegics want to be starved to death, no skin off my back. That's a good idea. In fact, I approve. It is dangerous because of the Americans who could enter the war against us for such a reason. And then concerning the remains, the ashes, inform family members that the urn will be sent to the nearest cemetery. That's if some family member asks. Free of charge. When such urns are sent to the nearest cemetery offices, the cemetery office must keep no files on them. Isn't that something? The practical procedure at the cemetery should occur as follows. One fine day, a package will arrive at the cemetery, and then it goes on. In my notes on my computer under Bible study, I have hundreds of topics. And they're all in alphabetical order when you open them up. When you open up the file for suicide, open up the file, Bible study notes, suicide, and it pops up and it says, see murder. And you click there and you go to the murder file because it's murder. What does the Bible say about suicide? Well, Jesus Christ uses the word murder, and when you kill the innocent, it's called murder. And Jesus said we need to carry our cross and bear our burden. He didn't say if it gets so difficult, then kill yourself. And when you advocate suicide to escape a difficult situation, you join a small group, a club of men in the Bible of two people, I think, King Saul and Judas. Judas betrayed Jesus Christ and committed suicide, and King Saul became a complete failure. His enemies were after him. He was injured, and he sought assisted suicide, but didn't get it, so he committed suicide. So suicide is sin, but it's not only sin. It's the crime of the shedding of innocent blood, killing innocent people. So as Christians, we need to do everything we can not to faint or fail because of this current lost battle, but to press on and let people know unequivocally that murder is wrong. And it's wrong to take your own life, and it's wrong to help someone else kill themselves, and it's okay to die, but it's not okay to kill the innocent.
Amen.
May God bless you all.
Okay, stop the tape. Stop the tape. This is Bob and Yart breaking into this message. If you'd like to hear the last part of this sermon, then go online to KGOV, that's KGOV.com. If you'd like to hear more generally, then you could subscribe to our Bob and Yart Live Bible Studies, and for $34.95 a month, that's $35 a month, get an entire album, Bible study album, on either audio tape or MP3 CD mailed to you each month. Or you can subscribe for only $24.95 a month to view one of our extraordinary videos each month or listen to our monthly sermons. To subscribe, please call 800-8-NYART. That's 800-836-9278, 836-9278. Or subscribe online at kgov.com. And you're invited to attend Denver Bible Church this Sunday morning or evening for Bible study, worship, and fellowship. And then there's Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. It's simply the best Christian school I've ever seen. Over 100 staff members, a beautiful 20-acre campus, top academics, and Christ-centered, all for your children. So call Maranatha at 303-431-5653. That's 303-431-5653. And again, come on out to Denver Bible Church.